Harding.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
This is Diamond Salivary.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Elter, Jay Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason Yancey McDonald.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Wapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mullet.
Thank you for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter Radio once again. I am your host, Kelsey Mullet. Joining me, as always, from his little hole, his little office in Edmonton, Alberta, is Mr. Brendan Lear.
Hole?
That's what you told me, man. Didn't you say your office was a little hole?
No. I have a palatial office.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you're lucky.
I have a beautiful view of all of southern Alberta from my office, which is very nice.
Oh,
it's very cloudy and rainy. Very Vancouver, very Vancouver-ish here though today.
Yeah, we're starting to get into the Vancouver winter weather, which is a lot of rain.
We've had 2 days of rain here, and I think I already have seasonal affective disorder.
Did you just move offices though, or you've been in the same office?
Slumping into a deep depression. No, same office.
Maybe I'm thinking of some other dude complaining about his office. But anyways, I don't think really anyone else listening gives a damn about your office.
Cares. Yeah. And believe it or not, surprisingly, that was one of our scripted entries.
Yeah, so what did you guys think?
It didn't work out too well. Offices? The hell's that? Why did you even pick that one?
I don't know. Well, next week I'll try another one of the scripts. It has a lot to do with Dungeons & Dragons as a foreshadowing. Well, Brandon,
can you still buy graph paper?
I don't know.
That's maybe what you else play that game, right? Like, you would know better than me, because I've actually never played it, but...
Yeah, I used to be a D&D guy back in the day. Nice. Back in the 80s.
Nice.
Yeah. Someone can also, you know, email us at radio@fcfighter.com if they've got... if they know what the modern-day Dungeons & Dragons gamer does these days. I don't know.
But again, include your name and email address.
I'll understand if you want to remain anonymous. We've got an interesting show today, Brendan. We've got a couple, both guys are instructors for Jiu-Jitsu, actually. Fabio Holanda, who's the instructor for Brazilian Top Team Canada, recently defeated Mike Bell at the last MFC. He's Patrick Cote's Jiu-Jitsu instructor, and it looks like he's going to be fighting a lot in the next couple of years. He's fought some in TKO over the last couple of years, but it seems like he's been taking on more fights, and so we'll be talking to him and where he's expected to take his career. So we're talking to Fabio Holanda, and then we also have Carlos Newton on the show, who's going to be talking to us about the IFL, and he is the coach of the Toronto Dragons. And we'll be talking to Carlos about his career and whether or not he's returning to MMA, which he has been planning on doing for a while. So should be an interesting show.
I think so. We haven't talked to Carlos Newton yet, and he's now just returning back into his career after a couple of years off, so it will be very interesting to see what he has to say about coming on, about restarting his career and coming into the ever-evolving world of mixed martial arts. It will be exciting to see him back, but it will be even more interesting to see how he fares and how the sport has evolved.
Yeah, well, with that, let's get him on the program, and everyone stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pit Bulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Miletich as he squares off in a fight to the finish against Jiu-Jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the San Jose Razor Claus, led by Frank Shamrock, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic super match of Miličić versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV. Cards subject to change.
Carlos Newton joins us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Carlos, I got to tell you, man, 7 o'clock in the morning, my time, as we're taping this segment. So I think that's a huge testament to the fact that we wanted you on the show.
Thanks so much, guys.
I don't get up too early in the morning.
No, man, that's a feet and a half, eh? Not for me, man. Kelsey didn't know there was 2 7 o'clocks in one day.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Carlos, we're bringing you on the show. You know, we wanted to have you on and talk to you about where your career is going. But first, let's talk about what's coming up first for you, and that's the IFL. You're going to be coaching the Toronto Dragons September 23rd against San Jose Razor Claws. And Carlos, as that date draws near, how is everything going with the Toronto Dragons?
Bring it on, man. The guys are doing great. Some of them I have known for years, and this is the best shape I've seen them in. And the guys are looking awesome. We have a very good team. We stack up as experience-wise and talent-wise as one of the best teams out there.
Carlos, we've talked to a number of people from the IFL. How much, one of the questions we always ask is how much responsibility do you have as a coach? First of all, what do you see your role as, and how much responsibility and freedom did you have to select your team?
Oh, I had a whole lot of freedom. I had tons of freedom. My guys just had to come in within their weight limits. That was basically the only requirement I had to satisfy. Other than that, I have full responsibility. I have, if anything is out of place or not in proper order with the team, it falls on my head. So, yeah, it's a big responsibility, but at the same time, it gave me so much freedom to work that it's a lot of fun.
So you're a real coach then. It's not just simply that the IFL wanted celebrities in the corners of the fighters, but this is a real legitimate league, and you guys you're responsible for training these fighters and responsible in some part for their performance and for their actions.
Yeah, 100%. If my fighters do not perform, it falls in my head. I lose my contract. It's a sizable salary to be a coach, and I'm not going to do anything but that in jeopardy. At the same time, even for myself, I'm still in training and training for future fights. So it's also very convenient for me to be training my team and also training along with the guys. Every day is a full, training capacity. That's my job, and I have to make sure these guys are in shape. They have the skills needed to win a fight, and I also do keep in mind that I got to look out for their safety and their well-being. So. On a personal note, that's, something I take very seriously, and I try my best, and I believe I do a great job.
Well, Carlos, if we could maybe go through for those people who don't know, who are on the Toronto Dragons, maybe let's just quickly go off, list the people who fight in each division, and then also if you could tell me, how did you go about the process of recruiting those fighters, and why did you pick the guys that you did?
Well, I think one of the first things that came to mind for me when I was choosing my team is the fact that we were the Toronto Dragons. So I was looking for, first I was giving first placement to local talent. Guys that had a good record and have the ability and potential to grow to become, future superstars and, be one of the greatest fighters ever in their weight classes. So that was my first off, but at the same time, it didn't limit my choice. I did look all over the place. I'm allowed to put anyone I want, on my team from this planet, so it doesn't matter, right? At 155, we got Rob DeSenza. He's an awesome fighter. He's fought in Abu Dhabi, so he's got great grappling skills. And at the same time, his stand-up has really, 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 really improved over the years that I've known him to be a grappler, and to the point where now he is faced with an MMA career. He's made himself very well prepared for this, opportunity.
Okay, and at 170, you've got
Claude Patrick. Yeah, Claude, a lot of guys out there,
especially in the local or Canadian scene, knows who Claude is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's fought some of the big shows out in Montreal, Apex, and TKO, and he's won the title in some of those organizations. And yeah, he's a force to be reckoned with at 170. I personally trained with him since maybe, I could say I was 17. So I've known this guy for quite some time, and he's always had awesome skills, he's going to be a very difficult fighter to handle because of his experience and his abilities in the ground game and the stand-up game just continue to constantly improve at a very rapid rate. So, yeah, he's going to be a tough guy to handle.
And then at middleweight, you've got your most experienced, the most notable fighter, I think most would say, Joe Dirksen.
Yeah, Joe. No, it was awesome having Joe. I think he was one of the first guys we tried to get. And we did try for other Canadian fighters that are up there, in Joe's caliber, but they were tied up. And at the middleweight, Joe was our first choice. And we're very happy to, have him signed on. And to have Joe Dirksen on your team is like, he's kind of your ringer man, he's a cooler. So he does help take a lot of pressure off the teammates, because he brings his experience to the table whenever the guys get together, and he pulls everyone up. So, big round for Joe.
And then at 205 and heavyweight, rounding out the team, we've got Brambo Parlan, and I hope I'm pronouncing the heavyweight's name correctly, Wojtek Kozlowski.
Yeah, Brent, again, from the Montreal scene, he is considered a local boy, and he's awesome. The interesting thing is Brent and Wojtek have fought one another, and, so have other members on their team fought one another either in grappling or striking competitions or even MMA competitions. So I find it does make a very interesting atmosphere with our team in that we intimately know one another on that level, to a point where we have all sparred together over the years and even fought against one another in actual competition. So it does make for a very unique chemistry and dynamic and a real camaraderie going out there because the guys intimately know one another's own skills.
So, Carlos, how long have you been together in the same place and the same time training as a team before? Will you have been together before you fight in later on this month?
As a team, I think we will have been together at least 6 weeks now, as a team, getting ready for this competition. I'd say somewhere between 6 and 4 weeks. We had to move pretty fast to get everyone signed on. And that's, and that's citing the date from the date they were signed on officially. Before that, I did round up the guys that, potentially were going to be on the team and ask them to come on and start training with us so, we can have a better look at their skills and figure out over, maybe a 1 month period, it was about whether or not they got, what it takes to carry this responsibility and represent Toronto.
So basically, 6 weeks out would be a legitimate or very ordinary fight camp for most MMA fighters.
Yeah, it's a good fight season to get ready for a fight. Training within 6 weeks is. It's adequate. It's not the greatest, but it's adequate. And,
it's not as good as Pride in K1, where you get to train for two weeks or 4 days.
4 days, yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, I've been there, done that. Oh my lord, you guys are funny. That's no fun, man. So 6 weeks, they're great. They've lots of heads up. We know ahead of time what paperwork and so forth the fighters need to have in order. It's great, it's professional, and the salaries are the best out there, and it's awesome. That's all I have to say.
Now you're taking on Frank Shamrock's San Jose Razor Claws, and Carlos, what do you know about that team, and what do you expect them, considering that they're a Frank Shamrock coach team, do you have any expectations on their game plan in that sense?
Expectations on their game plans, I met his fighters, and I know the guys, and, they're very good. It's, I believe it says middleweight. The guy's pretty awesome. And their welterweight is, truly exceptional fighter. He's fought guys like Nick Diaz and yeah, he's awesome. You know, the rest of the guys, you know, somewhat familiar with, and they match up on par with my guys, you know, as far as experience and so forth. So, I look forward to those being some real battles, and I think as much of as this is a test for my team, it's a test for the San Jose Rica Club.
Yeah, maybe I should list off the team really quickly. Dwayne Compton's at heavyweight, Rafael Davis at light heavyweight, Brian Ebersole's at middleweight, he's going to take on Joe Dirksen, Josh Odom's at lightweight, Jeff Quinlan's at middleweight, and they also have Ray Steinbest at welterweight listed and Travis Youf at light heavyweight, but I don't believe Travis will be fighting on this round.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was interesting having the fighters, both teams together for photo shoots. It was really cool, you know, to see that. Yeah, usually when you end up with a photo shoot with someone, you're always on your own, you know, being the one guy staring down the other guy. But to have a whole team staring down another team is pretty cool, man. It's something straight out of Beat Street. This is real cool.
So, Carlos, is it ironic to you that the Toronto Dragons were the first team named, and yet MMA is still unsanctioned in Ontario? What are your thoughts about that, and do you know anything from a sort of insider's perspective about what kind of pressures are coming to bear on the provincial government in Ontario to change that?
Oh, they're twisting the arm real hard, and it's coming along. Every day we do make strides, and I had to guess. I believe MMA will be, you know, taking place in Ontario within the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, legislation is a pretty slow process, and as long as everyone's diligent, it's definitely going to go through. Everyone is those who are in charge and have the authority to make it so, or you know, they're at the table talking. So, and it's just something I think right now everyone wants to make sure it's done right, and you know, it's not overran by the wrong elements and you know, misused and harmful to the fighters in the long term.
Now, Carlos, in a league with the IFL where you see all the coaches, or many of the coaches have participated, have fought, Hensel Gracie will be taking on Pat Milicic, it's the same card that your team's fighting on. You had Jeremy Horn versus Matt Lillen last weekend. What are the chances that we might see Coach Newton taking on another coach in the future in the IFL?
I'd say it's a very good possibility, guys. You know, it's something that is definitely, I believe, will happen very soon. You know, there's a lot of coaches out there, even that are signed right now, that are, you know, very good prospects for me to fight. You know, there's Matt Lindman, there's Pat Milicic, and, you know, those are just, you know, two fights to name. And these are fights that I look forward to. And at the same time, I do expect to be fighting sometime early this fall, you know, or near the end of the new year. And who knows, my fight might actually be one of those. And as far as some of my fellow coaches, those guys are, you know, they're still the best in the world in their weight class. And, you know, it's going to be a real challenge. I look forward to it. No better place to do it.
Mm, okay.
No offense to Pat Milicic, but do you go to sleep at night hoping that you get to fight Pat Milicic instead of Matt Lindman?
No. Right now, I'm planning to get a couple tune-up fights under my belt, and I'll come charging out the gates at both of them at the same time. So they gotta be ready.
Okay. And where would those warm-up fights possibly be? Would they might be in K1? You were set up to fight in the middleweight tournament that they recently had, and then K1 announced that you had an injury and you weren't able to compete. Could we see you returning to Japan again and fighting for K1 still before the IFL?
That is a real strong possibility, and as long as K1's got everything in order and you know all their responsibilities looked after, I'll definitely be there in the fall. But at the same time, it's also very likely that those tuna fights can be in the IFL.
Okay.
And you know, preferably right now, you know, the IFL, because I'm a coach and I know a lot of the other guys are having a lot of fun competing in that organization, and I feel very comfortable competing with that organization and see my future off to a, you know, a very stable return. Something that, you know, I'm very in favor of.
So Carlos, have you basically settled on fighting at 185 rather than 170 now for the remainder of your career?
Yeah, it's possible for me to make 170 now, guys. I'll have to cut a leg off or something. It's probably been that way for some time, even as when I was fighting as a welterweight, and now I'm just, you know, my weight has just skyrocketed. I've just gotten bigger, and you know, there's nothing you can do about that. And you know, I'm not one to eat like a squirrel all freaking day, so I'll say pass on that. And,
well, the obvious thing you do now on the show is you call up Buzz, one of your fellow coaches. You fight him at 220.
Yeah, I could make 220. That's the funny thing. Yeah, I've seen my weight come within 2 pounds of that. So.
Wow.
And I wasn't fat or anything. I've just gotten bigger. And it's just, you know, nothing you can do about it. When I go down to 170, I feel I have, you know, I don't have physical strength, which was something that really did bother me even when I was competing at that weight. And when I fight at 185 and my body is allowed to really settle at that weight for at least, you know, half a year and acclimatize, I feel very strong.
Well, Carlos, I wrote a story. We talked a couple months ago, and just catching up with what you've been up to the last little while, and the fact that you're returning to MMA competition. But for some of those people who maybe didn't see the story in Full Contact Fighter, tell us a little bit about your Ann Arbor Estates project and why you were away from the sport for almost 2 years now.
Yeah, well, Ann Arbor Estates is an assisted living retirement home, and I was volunteering with seniors at my local hospital, and a lot of them, they couldn't afford the places that were available out there to live, and also these places were just, you know, Shady Acres kind of type things going on. So I decided, you know, let me just see what I can do, and I worked real hard. I worked with families and some of the doctors that I was volunteering with, and we came up with this model for Ann Arbor Estates, and I implemented it. I funded it. I'm the director of operations, and I'm the president of the company. So, yeah, it's been a real journey. It's, I can honestly say, to date, it's probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
Wow.
Yes, it was, you know, about a year in, I was like, oh, Lord, what did I get myself into? But I thought that way, too, when I entered into MMA. Somewhere along the way, I was just like, oh, my God, I knew these monsters. And then I realized, you know, looking in the mirror, I'm that monster, too, so don't be scared. Just go and do it.
So you weren't just not fighting at the time, but you were your attention was taken away from MMA, and that leads me to my question. And that is, every time you turn around in MMA, it seems to evolve and change in some way, usually for the better. So what was it like coming back in and starting to train again and looking at the fighters you may be facing after having been out, literally out of the scene for a couple of years?
For me, I didn't find it that difficult to actually return to a sport because of, you know, the network of guys that I have here locally. And I still every, you know, week or so jumped into a gym and just, you know, got on the mats. I was teaching at my own school and getting in there and trying to keep these guys up to date. And, you know, they always kept me abreast of what was going on in the MMA scene. And, you know, they always asked you for explanations. So, you know, me being, you know, a UFC world champion and a very experienced fighter, you know, they're gonna obviously throw those questions at me. So, yeah, you know, I gotta have an answer. And very often, just thinking about it, you know, I'll say, yeah, this was the answer. But at the same time, you know, it kept me actively thinking and participating in the evolution of the sport. And I also knew that I was still very, very, fairly young, you know, and I just turned 30 this summer, so, you know, I look to fight till at least I'm 38, and I see it as a, you know, as a fresh start, not as a restart. I do see it as a fresh start, and I got the skills, and with the opportunity of the IFL, it gives me the chance to get right in there, in the ring with guys who are currently competing on the scene and doing very well. And because I have them, you know, basically right at a moment's notice to train with, it's very easy to go in there and see how, you know, I match up and how I, you know, my points are tally up. And I'm very happy with where I am right now, and I do see that I do have a tremendous amount of room to grow and an unexplored potential that I have not yet seen. You know, this is a middleweight, you know, weight class for me now, and welterweight, I saw where I can go. I had a great time, and it's something new, and that's really exciting.
And you mentioned that, I mean, you just turned 30, and for a lot of people, we remember you, you know, almost back in the inception of mixed martial arts, or when mixed martial arts started to be shown up here in North America. I mean, from your, I could be wrong, but things must look very different for the better, Carlos, if you consider where the sport's gone over the last 10 years.
If the sport makes the same strides it did in the last 10 years, if it grows to the same level that it has in the last 10 years, fighters will be making millions of dollars per fight. This industry will generate, you know, at least hundreds of millions of dollars for local economies, and that's something for everyone to be very happy about. And as long as we just keep that growth going, even at the same rate, even if we just match the same rate that has been shown over the last 10 years, it's going to be a phenomenal time for everyone.
Yeah. Brendan, do you have anything else for Carlos before we let him get out of here?
I have two more questions for you, Carlos. It seems that the stars have aligned possibly for a second matchup now between you and Sakuraba, who are both presently contractually obliged to K1. So they did manage to actually kill him in his first fight, but they came close. Do you think he's going to survive to be able to face you at some point? And did you actually see your fight? That fight?
Yeah, you know, my manager did make that point pretty evident to me that, you know, it looks like, you know, there is a good chance that you could be facing Sack, you know, come the second round of the tournament. And, you know, if things, you know, kind of work out the same as they did for the first round of the tournament, you know, there is a real possibility. Will Sack be around for the opportunity? I don't know. I do know that having a really tough time in there right now, you know, I don't know whether it's injuries or some prolonged stress, or, you know, if it's just the other fighter he's facing. You know, he is fighting good guys, and, you know, I'll definitely love an opportunity to show up in the second round for the K1 tournament. If it's against Sack, you know, be very pleased to accept that challenge, and you know, I'll just take it from there, one day at a time. Right now, I try not to get my hopes up too much, and you know, I have to focus on a lot of other things, and so I just maintain my training regimen and make sure I'm prepared if the opportunity comes.
So my second question for you is, on the internet forums, you've been very successful in gaining many advanced university degrees, from brain surgeon to you know, a Japanese language expert and physicians and something like that. And we've talked before and trained a little bit before together, but can you fill people in once and for all what you've done in your academic career, and then where you want to go? Because it's quite interesting.
Well, I'm actually still in school, guys. My academic career is something that is never ending. You know, I also help out my girlfriend, support her, you know, through her academic career, you know, both financially and you know, in time and resources also. And I was planning to, you know, look at a career in medicine, and you know, I got involved with this retirement home, and that was a exceptionally hard thing to do. And you know, I came out from the other end of that tunnel, you know, a new person, a different man. I really did feel that, you know, it made me grow up. And my academic career right now is just focusing on the prospect of, you know, getting into the construction industry and building more of these homes. And you know, building myself a financial base and becoming a truly a really successful entrepreneur for the day that I can someday be putting on my own promotions and, you know, pretty much back myself with my own money. And that's my goal right now of my academic career, as that, you know, Carlos Newton wants to be a fight promoter in the future, and I'm going to make it happen. My girlfriend, she just got into medical school. She's studying medicine at UFD. And we're very happy for that. And that alone was a lot of work, you know, studying for MCATs and so forth. And along the way, I said, you know what, hun, you seem to be picking up this end of things pretty good. And I think my time and experience over the last few years would be better spent and leveraged in this area of studies. So, you know, yeah, I'm on a new direction, but I'm still studying. So
the controversy is now set aside, and you've retired as an internet brain surgeon.
Yeah, I'm not an internet brain surgeon. That's hilarious. I still do a lot of other things. I still study languages and, you know, all that nifty stuff. That's something that never stops. And, yeah, it's it's a way to pass the time too.
Well, it sounds like you're an extremely busy individual, Carlos, and we appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to talk to us a la 10 o'clock in the morning your time. Now, 7:30 my time, so we've all got our days ahead of us to hopefully accomplish many dutiful chores. And best of luck, Carlos, next week. We appreciate you coming on the show, and you're welcome anytime.
All right, you got it, guys.
Thanks a lot, Carlos.
Hey, no problem, anytime.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing full contact fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fight wear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic full contact fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a full contact fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full contact fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Cage Fury Fighting Championship is coming to Atlantic City Friday, October 6th. This event guarantees nonstop action and a special appearance by Frank Shamrock. The excitement starts the day before at the weigh-in pre-party at the 4040 Club. Don't miss all the excitement. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com or CageFuryFighting.com.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is Mr. Fabio Halanda. Fabio, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, pretty well, thanks. Fabio is coming off last weekend's win over Mike Bell at the MFC in Edmonton, Alberta. And Fabio, my first question for you is, you know, talk us through the fight. Did it unfold in the way you thought? And what were your thoughts on Mike Bell, you know, now that...
When I fought him, I knew that he was a good striker. So I looked for a fight on the ground right away. I took him down and... I looked for submission for 2 minutes, and 2 minutes and a half, I got him in the triangle choke.
And Brendan was there. Brendan was covering the fights for the radio show. And Brendan, you know, what were your thoughts on the fight?
Yeah, I was ringside, and I was kind of worried at those later fights because everyone had gone one round, and I thought Bell might take you into the second, but you kept the perfect one round show streak alive. I was actually surprised at how competent Bell was defending a couple of different times when you had his back and were working for a rear naked choke. Did you expect him to be that proficient on the ground? Were you
No. I really surprised him because he was very, very strong, and I was expect to submit him from his.
Now, Fabio, what were your overall thoughts on the event, Fabio? Is your first time fighting in the MFC, correct?
Yeah, it was my first time in MFC.
And you recently signed with ProCamp, which is a management company of Mark Pavlich. He's one of the promoters at MFC. Fabio, tell us a little bit about why you decided to sign with Mark, and what exactly does that deal entail? Is he just your fight manager, or is that an exclusive fight deal with the MFC? How does that work?
No, just to the record, before I never had a manager. So Mark called me and asked to be my manager, and It's just about the management. It's not exclusively at MFC.
Okay.
I want to fight everywhere. Everywhere he's going to look for a fight from me, I want to fight.
Well, Fabio, tell me a bit about your the beginning of your professional career, and tell us a little bit about you. You now live in Montreal and train in Montreal and are the coach of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach of Patrick Cote. But tell us about your experience learning Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, where you came from, how you found your way to Montreal.
I came from Brazilian Top Team in Brazil. Alright, I used to train with, Murilo Bustamante, Maris Perry, Nogueira Brothers, Arona, Paulo Filho, everybody in Brazil. But, my brother used to live here in Montreal since 6 years ago. So we find a gym here and I came to give a seminar and, we got in a business here, so I stay here.
Sorry, are you then the founder of, a Brazilian Top Team Canada?
Yeah, I'm a founder with Felipe Jalinas, is my partner. We are the first Brazilian Top Team affiliate outside of Brazil.
Okay, and you got your black belt, I believe you told me once, was it through Murilo Bustamante?
Yeah, I got my black belt with Murilo Bustamante.
And who are some of the other MMA fighters that we might know that you helped train? I mean, Brendan mentioned Patrick Cote, but who else have you been the jiu-jitsu coach for, Fabio?
Yeah, we have the team here, right, and a bit to Canada. We have Patrick Cote as well, and Samuel Guillet, Stefan Podzen, Stefan Vigneau, Stefan Zubim, and we have more five, ten guys, they fight all the time.
Right.
And do you train at all, do you cross-train with the people from TriStar, or are they sort of the in-town rivals?
No, we don't cross-train with TriStar. TriStar has his own team over there, and we have our team here.
Now, looking, Brennan was mentioning your career early on, and you started out with an 0-3, had a couple losses, but they're all against very notable opponents. For people who might not be familiar, the loss against Thiago Alves, I believe, Jay Heron, Drew Fickett, and then you've won four of your last five fights, Fabio. You know, obviously the first few guys you fought are very high caliber fighters, but aside from that, what do you attribute to the difference? I mean, why do you think you're winning most of your fights now compared to earlier on? Have you changed up your training at all?
No, my training is, I got better for sure because day by day training hard, you're just getting better. But at the beginning of my career, when I fought first one was Thiago Alves, the fight was at 180 pounds. So after Jihairo was 17 and Drew Figo was 17 as well. So I never used to cut weight. So my normal weight used to be 17 and 180. Mm-hmm. So now I'm fight 155. So since I'm fighting 155 and my record is 4-1 at 155. Just I think is the huge difference.
And do you think some people maybe, you took on Alvin Robinson and took him out in second round TKO and he was undefeated at the time. Do you think some people, Fabio, looked at your record at one point and you've got a couple losses and sort of didn't realize the actual caliber fighter you are?
For sure. When you now I have an even record, but before I had a losing record, right? So nobody gives you a credit, all right?
Yeah.
But like you said, it's like I fought tough guys, not like I have a 10-0 against the bums, you know. Mm-hmm. I had a 4-4, but was like all tough guys.
What are your reflections on the performance of your teammates at Brazilian Top Team this past weekend? It was kind of a bittersweet event. Have you discussed that with them, and what did you think of the results of that event?
Oh, I think Arona did great, all right? He was surprising a bit because Overeem is a very tough fighter, and he took the fight like a little bit easy. And about Nogueira, you know, was a tough fight. I think he won this fight, but was close. Could go both sides, right? So they give to Barnett, but in my opinion, he won by split decision this fight.
Mm-hmm. And then when you look at the middleweights over in Pride right now, you've got Dennis Kang, Fabio, who's affiliated with Marcos Suarez, who's a black belt through Carlson Gracie, and then of course you got Paulo Filho, who's part of the Brazilian Top Team. What are your thoughts on those two and the success they have? If they do end up fighting each other in the final, do you have a pick, Fabio, on who you might think would win between Filho and Kang?
I think they're gonna make the final, Filho and Kang, and it's gonna be a very tough fight because Kang has come very, very good. He's improved a lot. But I want to pick Paulo Filho. He's just incredible. He never lost. He's still undefeated, and he's very, very strong.
Yeah.
Have you trained a significant amount with Paulo Filho enough to gauge his strength in jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, I used to train with him almost every day. He used to be my neighbor in Brazil.
Oh,
I used to go to the gym with him and go and go back. He's unbelievably strong.
So how long have you, when did you relocate here then? How many years have you been here again now, Fabio?
I've been here in Montreal for 2.5 years now.
Oh, okay.
And what do you think of the experience of living in Montreal? Montreal is a very unique city in terms of North American cities. Do you feel comfortable there? It's always been renowned as having a very international flair, second probably only to Toronto. Are you comfortable living in Montreal?
Oh, I'm very comfortable. I really like living here. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of Brazil sometimes because it's people from everywhere in the world, you know. You have a lot of Italians, you know, Brazilians, people from everywhere. And you have a good trend in wrestling, even judo, Muay Thai, boxing. You have a lot of good schools here. So I'm very happy here. And the only problem is the winter, right? I'm not used to it.
No, I would think that'd be relatively harsh compared to Brazil. Fabio, you've already fought 3 times this year. How do you balance, you know, teaching with BTT? How do you, you know, training people, other students in Montreal? What are your plans? Is this part of the reason signing with Mark Pavlich? Are you trying to fight as much as possible against the best kind of fighters you can right now?
Yes, you're right. That's the biggest reason I'm with Pavlich now, because normally I have a fighter here. I manage some of my fighters too. I have to coach them, and I teach more than 10 classes per week, and I have to train, and I have to look for fights for me. Mm-hmm. So now I have, you know, one thing left to do it, so I can focus more on teaching my fighters and be focused to train too. That's why last year I just fought once, because, you know, I had a fight in TKO, they offered him, I took it, but I didn't look for a fight, you know what I mean? Because I was busy.
Fabio, if you could pick one organization that you would like to fight in terms of the quality of your opponents right now, where would it be? Where do you ideally see yourself ending up?
I know, it's like, I don't know, but my dream is to fight in Pride one day, right? So I'm going to start from here, NFC, TKO, maybe I want to get an UFC one day, but what I really want is to be in Pride. Because I always train in Brazil and see all my teammates and my coach fighting Pride, right? So that is my goal.
Now, over at Brazilian Top Team, maybe go through who helps you guys with your stand-up. I know, obviously, you know, I've talked to Stefan Poffin before, and I know you talked to you before as well as you've gotten ready for upcoming fights. And I know you guys work on your stand-up a lot. So maybe, how do you do that? Do you have actual boxing coaches as members of the team, or do you guys head out to other gyms to train on the stand-up?
Some guys, they go outside of the gym, but I have a boxing coach here. It's George.
George.
My partner. George, his last name, it's Russian. I never know how to pronounce.
Okay.
But my Muay Thai coach is my partner at BTT Canada. It's Philippe Jalinas. So I train in the gym, and we have a wrestling coach in the gym too. So the teams grew up, you know. We just had 1.5 years of, you know, of BKT Canada here, and we're doing very well.
Two more questions for you, for me, Fabio. The first is what did you think of Babalu's strategy and his performance against Liddell in the last UFC?
First of Babalu, I think, you know, he was in. I don't know what's wrong with those guys when they fight Chuck Liddell. He just got in the Chuck Liddell game, right? So it's easy for him. I think he's rushed to, you know, to strike. I don't know. I think you have to be more patient and try to take him down, because it's the best way to go.
You know, you've obviously been involved in a great deal of the turnaround of success for Patrick Cote. You know, he was up against top-level talent in the UFC and dropped a few fights in a row, but a lot of people expected Patrick to come back, and he clearly has. What was that process like, Fabio? You obviously had a ringside and instructor side vantage point. It seemed to me, and I could be wrong, but that he really improved his wrestling and ground game. Is that why Patrick Cote has had so much success in the last year, Fabio?
Yes, this is the reason. Because Patrick Cote for me is like is the kind of fighter, it's perfect for me to help, right? Because he's already came to the gym with very, very good hands. So we have an awesome coach in the wrestling, and me to coach him at jiu-jitsu, so, and to mix it up. So So for us, it's perfect to work with Cote because he's trained very hard and he's learned wrestling and jiu-jitsu. Like, day by day, he's getting better. He's going to surprise a lot of people.
Fabio, I am going to ask you one more question. Just following up Kelsey's question, do you see that as being the ideal fighter, someone with excellent stand-up skills that can actually learn the ground game afterwards? So the prototypes of like a Crow Cop or a Chuck Liddell who are having so much success, or do you think you can be a top level fighter going the other way? Do you think you can learn enough stand-up to be a top level fighter?
For sure, for sure. I think the other way, it's maybe can be a little bit harder, but when you put the wrestling together, it makes a lot of difference. That's what I think sometimes for a jiu-jitsu guys, they don't train wrestling. That makes a lot of difference because if you don't take the opponent down, you can't show your jiu-jitsu, right? So a lot of people don't train wrestling. That's, you know, it's hard. But like for me, I learned boxing and Muay Thai, maybe not to knock someone out. It's just to be safe, take my time to take him down. That's what I'm doing very, very hard is my wrestling training. I go very hard and my skill in wrestling getting better. So make me confident to get in the fight. But I think so. I think you can go the other way around.
Fabio, I've got just two more quick questions for you. The first one is, you've fought in TKO a couple times, and this upcoming month, actually just in a couple weeks, you've got Mark Hominek, who's set to fight Ivan Menjivar, which is going to be a great 145-pound fight. Do you have a prediction, or do you have a call you would make on that, Fabio? Who do you expect to come out of that fight?
I don't know. It's like Ivan Menjivar. He's an incredible fighter, you know. He's well-rounded, good jiu-jitsu, good wrestling, good. My name is he's improved a lot, and everybody can see his last fight. He's just like he's doing very well. His stand-up, it's very good. I don't know. For me, it's 50-50. Can go both ways on this fight.
And my last question for Fabio: Do you know where you're going to be fighting next? Everything else lined up in the rest of this year yet, or is that still remain to be seen?
Oh, we'll see. But I think maybe I'm going to fight on December 2nd on ECC and Halifax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if something's coming up before, I'm going to be ready.
Well, we appreciate you taking some time out to talk to us, and congrats on the fight this past weekend again, Fabio, and we wish you all the best of luck in the future.
Good luck, Fabio. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, some interesting comments from both Carlos Newton and Fabio Holanda. You know, another quasi-all-Canadian show in the sense that both guys live in Canada. And two great grapplers, two jiu-jitsu wizards.
It was very interesting to talk to both, and Fabio's interview was very interesting. Reflections on being brought up by the Brazilian top team, and who knows, maybe his Brazilian top team Canada can reflect some of the success of its cousin to the south.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have, you know, begun to make some inroads into Canadian mixed martial arts. I think Stefan Potvin and Patrick Cote are the two main names that come out as far as Canadian talent goes, in particular Patrick Cote, who I'm not sure if Patrick actually calls himself a member of Brazilian Top Team Canada, though, but he does train with Fabio Holanda a great deal, so definitely those two guys, both middleweights, are probably the two most notable names, but it sounds like they've got some other guys who are going to come out of the fold, and then clearly it sounds as well that Fabio's committed to fighting as much as possible in the next few years.
Speaking of Patrick Cote, have you been watching the reality show at all?
I haven't, yeah.
You barely see the guy on that show.
Yeah.
What does he do? He sleep in his closet all day, or?
Yeah.
he must not be interacting very much. And then whenever he does speak to anyone, it's usually Saint Pierre and in French, and then everyone goes on the internet and accuses him of conspiring together.
I wasn't aware of the conspiracy theories that are on the
yes,
internet.
Yes, there's some conspiracy theories out there.
You can always take so much out of the various internet theories. They're quite often so extremely accurate. But
that's what I like. Do you know, when I have an extra 5 minutes in the day, I just have nothing else to do. There's nothing that makes my day like hitting the forums.
Right. No, I think with Patrick, you know, it's obviously you mentioned the English barrier there a little bit. Patrick does speak English quite well. I don't know if the producers, you know, determine that perhaps he, you know, doesn't speak it well enough for the American audience in the sense that, you know, some of us Canadians are a little bit more accustomed to talking to people with Quebecois accents, etc. But, I don't know. He, you know, every time I've talked to Patrick, he's a very kind, seems like a really kind guy, not too outspoken. I don't know if those variables maybe add up to him not being too much in the foreground on that show. But I'm interested to see him fight, you know. It looks like his time will be coming up soon where we'll see him fight finally on the show.
Well, I kind of wanted to see him, cuss out Shoni Carter in French. like the Quebecois only can.
Right. That would have been sweet.
Maybe it's still coming up.
Maybe. And then talking to Carlos Noon as well, he was mentioning his possibility of fighting for the IFL, and that sounds almost sounds like it's a certainty, by the way he makes it sound. And that would be really interesting, you know. You would have to think that if Carlos is willing to fight, and it obviously sounds like he is, that the IFL will have him compete for them at some point.
Right. It will be interesting, and all props to Carlos, but coming back after a couple of years of not fighting and actually following some losses, I think the last guy on earth you'd ever want to step into the ring would be Matt Lindland, but who knows?
Yeah.
I think probably the last thing anyone at 185 would want to do is be to step into the ring with Matt Lindland right now, the way he's performed recently.
Yeah, without question. Speaking of conspiracy theories that you mentioned, you know, there are some who still maintain that the UFC in part got rid of him because of the fact that they just didn't want him, you know, the style fighter he was at the time, being their champion. But I also, you know, and we've talked about Matt Lindland before many times on the show, but, you know, I didn't see his fight against Jeremy Horn, but it really seems like, you know, his game has definitely evolved since he was even in the UFC. He's even a better fighter now, and it sounds like he's even a more entertaining fighter now, too, than he used to be.
We'll see. That'll be interesting to see that fight whenever we get to see it on television.
Yeah, hopefully Sportsnet, Canada's Roger Sportsnet, will show it, you know, sometime in the near future for us Canadians.
Although it's frustrating, you know. I don't know why they can't... why they can't have a big fight like that, why they can't at least make some kind of effort to air it live. Because, once you know who wins a fight, a lot of the excitement's taken away. It's nice to watch as a matter of interest, but it's just not the same. So I guess that's the next big step for the IFL, is being able to air some big fights live, hopefully. And I don't know if obviously cable sports networks have the capacity to do that. I don't know if their willingness, we'll see.
Well, yeah, I mean, and then you could also argue, though, about the benefits of having more widespread exposure. I think the IFL would probably be best suited if they could follow a similar model to the UFC, where you get some free network exposure to spread the sport, and then you also have the resulting wider pay-per-view audience. I think that's the model that most North American mixed martial arts organizations are going to try to pursue right now.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think that I've never heard the IFL mention anything about wanting to pursue a pay-per-view model.
Well, I think right now you have to look at, they're going to go for, I think most upstart organizations, if they have a choice, you're going to go with the free, if you have a network the size of Fox Sports willing to show your programs, willing to show your fights, your cards, then you're going to go with that first, just because simply you're going to get in that many more households. And then you can look at the pay-per-view route. But most upstart organizations don't have that as an option, so their only choice is pay-per-view. And, pay-per-view can be a great source of money raising in the case of the UFC, but I mean, if you look at the WFA, you know, apparently it sounds like they lost some money on their first show. So it's still tough sledding to get people to fork out, you know, $20-$25 even for a card where they might not be too familiar with a great number of fighters. Although I say that, and then you look at the WFA, who had very notable fighters, and apparently, you know, those guys, Quinton Jackson comes to mind, hadn't infiltrated the mainstream mixed martial arts audience yet in the States. Most people are still only familiar with the UFC.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's just you can never underestimate the power of television. And, you know, look at the people that television has made famous. You know, Paris Hilton, Dog the Bounty Hunter. People like that who are famous only because they appeared on, you know, a cable TV show. So.
You just alienated 90% of our audience, buddy. This will probably be the last show we ever do now because of those.
Are you trying to tell me that everyone loves Paris Hilton?
Well, I think probably there's probably a sizable amount of people out there, man, who like her. And same with Dog.
Can't believe you're
dissing Dog on my show.
Did I diss Dog?
Well, you.
I said TV made him famous. That's all I said. I didn't diss him. And now he's just gotten himself arrested.
I know. That's
an extradited shiny. To Mexico.
But,
I don't understand exactly what on earth, how low you have to stoop to get extradited to Mexico.
It sounds like
I'm not sure.
Well, wasn't it because bounty hunting is illegal in Mexico?
There you go.
Yeah.
That's just a very civilized country, Mexico.
Yes. Well,
I lived there. I lived there for a good long time, and you know, they don't like bounty hunters.
Okay, where were we? Let's try to get back on MMA here.
Left wing gorillas, fine.
Yeah.
Bounty hunters, no.
Right.
But back to my point about television, the power of television.
Yes.
You know, these little cable shows launch. Huge career, so you know, it's definitely the way to go. If you can get on free TV, you have limitless potential for exposure and to sell your brand, which is basically what the UFC has done.
A couple other things I wanted to make note of this weekend, a little on the slower side, there's a few local cards, of course, like there is every weekend now, thankfully, in mixed martial arts. And then we'll make our picks for the UFC next week. But a couple things I wanted to mention. First one was that there's been a lot of speculation on for TKO 29, which is coming up at the end of this month in Montreal, Quebec. It's going to be in the Bell Center. First time ever mixed martial arts event is going to be held in the Bell Center, where Montreal Canadiens play. It's a 21,000 seat venue. There's been speculation about whether or not Ivan Menjivar would actually fight Mark Hominick. That's been the listed main event because Ivan Menjivar is scheduled to fight Cal Uno in the second round of the K1 lightweight tournament October 9th. So he's barely got any time between those two fights, but it sounds like Ivan has agreed to go for both fights. So I guess for his sake, he's got to hope that he gets through Hominick unscathed and doesn't get any cut or injured. And then apparently he's going to go and fight Cal Uno. What is that, 12 days difference?
It's Ivan Menjivar, man.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's a
machine.
Fights,
he probably gets in two fights every day. You know, he probably has to fight his way to the gym. The guy's in tough, and sometimes I think now that when you see a lot of top level fighters fighting like two and three times a year, it's just not the experience that we grew up with MMA. You know, fighting four times in one night. You know, still we see the one of the things about the exciting thing about the last show was the two fights in one night for these for Krokop and Barnett, and they look like crap at the end of it. But it's not like their last fight was not exciting. So it's possible. And I think as long as you don't have serious injuries sustained in the fight, which is definitely a potential against Mark Hominick to get banged up and at least smacked around, he should be able to pull it off. And more props to him, you know.
Well, I think it remains to be seen. I personally look at it as if I had tickets and I was a big Ivan Menjivar fan for the K1 show, I'd be, really holding my breath. And that's not saying that I think Menzovar is going to get destroyed by Hominick or anything like that. But like you mentioned, Mark's a very well-accomplished striker. And, you know, I understand what you're saying with the two fights in one night and how it's not the experience that we grew up with. And, you know, when I look at the UFC and, you know, some guys, like if Rich Franklin only fights twice this year, I love watching the guy fight. And to me, that's unfortunate if we only get to see him fight two times in one year. The flip side of that, though, is I don't necessarily agree with, with fighters who take on too much. And the reason I say that is because I just think that the sport is getting to the level where you're going to start having very high-profile fights, and hopefully, you know, in the future, the money will be there so that a guy like Ivan Menjivar isn't tempted to have to take two high-profile fights in a span of less than 2 weeks because he doesn't make that much money, and he just can't turn down, $10,000-$20,000, whatever it may be in this scenario. So hopefully we get to a point where I think it'd be a nice happy medium where guys are fighting, let's say, once every 2 months.
Yeah, I think it all depends. It depends very much on the, like I said, it goes back to what we were talking about in terms of reflecting back on what Marshall McLuhan said, that the medium is the message. So the way you translate that into MMA is that whatever you're appearing on, whatever medium you're appearing on, whatever format of television you're appearing on, will dictate how many times you fight and will dictate the ideal amount of times you fight, which is unfortunate. So if you're fighting on free TV, we would like to see fighters fight a couple times, once every 2 months. If you're fighting pay-per-view, you've got to build up these shows to sell them, right? So
yeah,
it's a completely different profit model than free television. So it would be very interesting to see how organizations ideally compete with one another when, say, for instance, one would be on an advertising revenue model where you would want your champions to fight more often, and the other building up, you've got four or five champions now in the UFC, potentially six someday. You know, you can't have them fight all the time because mm-hmm. you simply can't build up the fights to sell pay-per-views.
Yeah, no, it's true. The last thing I wanted to mention was that it's been announced, I believe it was announced yesterday, but maybe it was announced by the UFC the day before and I didn't notice, but I know the MFC announced that Jason McDonald, who we've had on the program and we've talked to some other Canadian middleweights about Jason, he who just won at the MFC this past week against Neil Barry, it's been announced he'll take on Ed Herman October 10th on the Spike card, which will feature Tito Ortiz versus Ken Shamrock 3. But yeah, I just wanted to announce that as well. Jason McDonald will be taking on Ed Herman, so that's a tough fight for Jason in his UFC debut.
Yeah, and I think it's a tough fight for Ed Herman as well, because I think Jason's one of those fighters coming from Canada, and he's fought some decent fighters, but I think he's one of these guys that would be very easy to underestimate, and we'll see what kind of condition Ed Herman comes in and what kind of sense he comes to fight with. So I think it'll be a great fight. McDonald's a great fighter, just to look at. He's great on the ground. He's got great stand-up. So I think he'll put on a good... The fight will be a great show regardless of what happens.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, Brendan, with that, I'm going to wrap up the show, buddy, and we'll talk next week. We've got a busy week ahead of us next week, and I'll be seeking my revenge in the pick, the UFC picks. Hopefully I can retake the lead, which I had for the first 16 episodes of this program.
Well, I think, Kelsey, you should go out this week and buy Paris Hilton's new record, and then I think you should start up a defense fund for Dog.
I agree. Those are interesting projects for me this weekend, without question.
I'm trying to stay up to Matt this week, bro.
Yeah, bra. Ice. Don't they call it ice?
Ice, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Cool. All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you soon, then.
Bye.
Have a good weekend.